I've got some of it memorized, but it might be a really short sermon if it had to depend on that. Yes, my wife and I were married 30 years ago. It doesn't seem like it's been a day over 50 years throughout that time. You know, I'm going to tell you this version, and since it comes from me being a preacher, it's the gospel version. I don't know what version you'll get from her. But 30 years ago, you know, we had dated for 5 months. And she came to me one time we were sitting around, and she said, "You know, we ought to get married." And I said, "That sounds good to me." So we did. That was exactly how it happened right there. She asked me to marry her. 1 month later, we were married. It was a 6-month courtship. That's how long it took. But she was looking for a Christian man to marry. I was looking for a Christian woman who was really good looking. So we both got what we wanted out of the deal. We're thankful. We're thankful to have spent the 30 years together. Last week, I started a series of lessons, just 3 lessons. We looked at Simon the Cyrenian as we've been looking at the topic of life changes at the cross. And we've noted how, you know, life has changed us. Christ and what He did for us has changed our lives. But it's always interesting to read and study and examine, you know, the events that surrounded the cross. And one of the things that's amazing to me is it's just there's so many events and sub-events and subplots and things that are going on whenever you really get into the study of it. And what we're looking at is really kind of some minor characters in that particular event. Simon the Cyrenian, not mentioned much. But as we looked at last week, the experience that he had in carrying the cross ended up impacting the rest of his life. Not only his life, but his family's life as well. And this morning we want to take a look at the centurion that was present at the death of Christ, standing at the cross. And in 2 weeks, next week, Don will be bringing you a lesson while I'm absent at Lads to Leaders. And I'm sure he'll have a good lesson to bring you at that time. In 2 weeks, we're going to look at the last lesson in this series, which is, I think, a very, not confusing for us, but for a lot of folks within the so-called Christian world, they kind of have a hard time with the character of the thief on the cross and what transpired there in his salvation. So we're going to be looking at his heart change. And that's interesting in itself. But we're also going to look a little bit at what occurred there and Jesus granting him forgiveness on that cross. And that will help us to lead into a series of lessons that are going to be on salvation. Every 2 or 3 years, I like to cover the topic of salvation and look at what the Bible says on our salvation. I will say that, you know, obviously we want to target those that have not obeyed the gospel. But I think that those lessons are always good to reaffirm our faith and our stand on what the Bible teaches on salvation. And also, I think that probably you'll learn a couple of things or a couple of ways in which you can express the salvation issue to others and help them to understand it greater than probably what they already understand it in their own lives. But certainly, if you've got friends, neighbors, and family that you think would be interested in listening to those lessons on God's plan of salvation, then please be bringing them around here in about 3 weeks as we have a few lessons on that. So this morning we want to start in Mark chapter 15, verse 37 through 39. And we're going to look at, all of these scriptures that are involved in the 4 Gospels concerning this centurion. It says, "And Jesus cried out with a loud voice and breathed his last. Then the veil of the temple was torn in two from top to bottom. So when the centurion who stood opposite him saw that he cried out like this and breathed his last, he said, "Truly, this man was the Son of God." You know, whenever you realize who it is that's making this confession and this statement, it is just awesome to think about because of the background that this man would have come from. Not much was known about the centurion except that it was probably safe to say that he was a pagan who was only following his duty as a soldier. You have to remember that, you know, even though the Jews had their own armed guards, the soldiers that would stand by the cross, which was a judgment made by Pilate, who was an official of Rome, the centurion and his soldiers in this event would have been Roman citizens. They were Roman soldiers, and the Romans did not let Jews join them, so they didn't like the Jews. Jews didn't like the Romans. So last thing the Romans want are the soldiers in their guard that are Jews. So this man was not a Jew. He was a Gentile and likely a pagan, as most of the Gentiles were in this Greek culture. Perhaps he was one of the soldiers who had scourged Christ, shoved a crown of thorns on his head, a scarlet robe on his body, hit him on the head with a reed, spit on him, and mocked him, as he said, "The King of the Jews," before leading him away to pound his body upon the cruel cross. It was very probable that he was one of the soldiers who offered sour wine to him while he hung on the cross and continued to mock him on the cross. More importantly, the centurion had to stand there and guard the body of Jesus while he hung upon the cross. And this is where it's important. Because of his duty, he had no choice but to witness the events that transpired that day. And it was because he had to witness those events that things started happening that changed his heart. Luke chapter 23 and verse 44 through 48 says this. Now it was about the sixth hour, and there was darkness over all the earth until the ninth hour. Then the sun was darkened, and the veil of the temple was torn in two. And when Jesus had cried out with a loud voice, he said, "Father, into your hands I commit my spirit." Having said this, he breathed his last. So when the centurion saw what had happened, he glorified God, saying, "Certainly this was a righteous man." And the whole crowd who came together to that sight, seeing what had been done, beat their breasts and returned. And you know, I looked up the expression, they beat their breasts, and you know, what was behind that? And most all the commentators agreed that it was an expression back then in the culture that meant that they were touched in their hearts, that they were affected in their hearts by what had happened. So, you know, we're talking about the centurion. We talked about Simon the Cyrenian last week. But, you know, if you want to even get even more minor in characters, it was this crowd that was gathered there. Some of those whose names were not mentioned, even they were affected by the events. Even they and their hearts were touched in the moments of witnessing what happened as Christ hung upon the cross. But from noon until 3 o'clock in the day, this is the hour, you know, don't get confused by the sixth to ninth hour. The Jews kind of have a different system of time and how they counted time. But for us, it would have been from noon to 3 o'clock, daytime. The centurion witnessed darkness whenever there should have been sunlight. Was it an eclipse? Absolutely not, because here's the facts of the matter. There has never been an eclipse in the history of mankind that has lasted for 3 hours. And this was not even normal to an eclipse. Even in with an eclipse, there's still light. You know, there's still a concept of you know, this is still daytime. You know, an eclipse cannot block out the rays of the sun to the extent of making it like dark or like night. But this was like night. This is explained and shown as darkness upon the land. So this was not a normal event. This was definitely supernatural. In Matthew chapter 27, verse 50 through 54, it says this: "And Jesus cried out again with a loud voice and yielded up his spirit. Then behold, the veil of the temple was torn in two from the top to the bottom. And the earth quaked and the rocks were split. And the graves were opened. And many bodies of the saints who had fallen asleep were raised. And coming out of the graves after his resurrection, they went into the holy city and appeared to many." Young people, this is about as close to a zombie apocalypse that ever happened in our lifetime. You know, with all the fascination with zombies and the movies and all that kind of stuff and the TV shows, this is about as close as it was, except I think that there was probably a lot more miraculous happening. I don't think they were searching for brains to eat. I think that they just came up out of the graves as normal as you and I, and were appeared to their families and apparently lived on in a normal life until they died again. So it was an interesting situation. There's a lot of questions there that we'd like a lot more. You know, we'd like to ask a lot more questions and find out a lot more answers. We just don't have it. But again, the centurion, as he is standing there witnessing all these things, it affects him in a way to realize that this man who called himself the Son of God truly was the Son of God. It was enough to convict him in his heart that this Jesus was the Son of God. And notice the fact that he is now acknowledging God. Not the gods, not the ones he grew up with, but the God, the true and the living God. The God who was the Father of the Son, Jesus Christ. An earthquake was not uncommon in the Jerusalem vicinity, but one such as this definitely was. An earthquake with the magnitude to rent rocks and open tombs selectively. You understand that, right? Not all tombs were open. Just tombs of the saints. And last week and last Sunday night, we had a devotional, and we discussed what a saint is. And a lot of times we always say, well, a saint is a Christian. But a saint actually is one who is righteous. Remember, Christ hasn't, Christians haven't been named yet. The church hasn't been established at this point, and yet it's calling this area as those tombs of the saints. And whenever you go back into the Old Testament, the word saints appears over 30 times. So it was those who were righteous before the Lord. Even under the old law, there were a lot of folks who lived faithful, who were righteous in God's sight. And this is the tombs that would have been opened, as those who lived righteously in their prior life. But selectively, it opened these tombs. It should have toppled buildings in Jerusalem, but it didn't. It just did these things. Yet the only damage done in Jerusalem was the tearing of the veil in the temple, which would not have been done by an earthquake, but I think was done by the hand of God. It should have caused the crosses to fall to the ground, and yet they did not. The centurion witnessed these events. What must have crossed the mind of the centurion on that day that would have caused a statement of such drastic change and conviction? We do not know if he ever made a life change like we do with Simon. But certainly he had a change of heart. And when we think about what he said, when he proclaimed, "Truly this is the Son of God," it leads us to believe that with such belief and conviction, it was likely that this man not only had a change of heart, but also a change of life. But a change of heart, why? After all he witnessed, what exactly or what precisely would have caused him to have that change of heart? Because let's face it, there were also those Pharisees and Sadducees and religious rulers who were also at the events of the cross. And yet their hearts were not touched. Their hearts were not changed. Later on, we do hear about some of them converting over in the book of Acts into Christianity. But even then, you wonder if their hearts were truly convicted because they started causing problems in the church not soon after they were converted. But these men didn't change. But the centurion did. The centurion's heart was affected. So what could have happened there? I think one of the things, whenever we look at who this man likely was, he suffered the frustration with power and non-existence of living a life with pagan gods. You know, it's one of the things, we talked a little bit about this when we talked about prayer. We can see the evidence of our God in our lives. We see the way that He affects our lives. We see Him answering prayers. We see Him leading us in directions and areas of righteousness where we need to be. We see Him sometimes giving us solutions to the problems that we have in our life. And so we see Him alive and active within our life. We don't actually see physically that He is here. But we know He's here by what our faith tells us and also by the results and actions that we see within our lives. But what if you're a pagan? Can you imagine what the centurion was feeling as he was witnessing all these things? He probably thought to himself, you know, I haven't worshipped one God in my life. I haven't served one God. I've worshipped and served a lot of gods. I've called on all their names. And yet I've never seen one bit of evidence that they ever existed. And in a small amount of time, he witnesses the God who this man claims was his father. And he knows that this God lives. This God has power. And this God truly was the God of this man, and that this man was the Son of God. On two occasions, the gospel account says that he confessed truly. That means he knew it in truth that this was the Son of God. God, through the history of man, has offered many promises. Every promise has either been fulfilled or will be fulfilled. He promised Abraham a son, and he delivered at the ripe old age of 99. He promised the Hebrew people he would lead them out of bondage and into a promised land. He did just as he promised. He promised Gideon a victory over the Midianites and even shrunk the army to a small number and was largely outnumbered, and still he gave them victory. He promised Solomon great wisdom. Solomon received that great wisdom. He didn't always live by it, but he did receive it, just as God said that he would give it. He promised King Hezekiah on his deathbed that he would give him 15 more years of life, and he did just as he promised. He promised throughout the Old Testament that he would send a Messiah, his own son, and he did so. And it was in that moment that the centurion witnessed that this truly was the Son of God, that he must have also realized, you know, my gods have done nothing for me. I have never seen any evidence of my gods. They give a lot of promises. They've told me if I will worship them, if I will sacrifice unto them, that they will hear my pleas, that they will provide these things, but they never have. And yet in a small amount of time, I have witnessed the power of a true and living God. That had to have made an impact on his life, and it did. It affected his heart in such a way that he could make such a powerful statement as he did. How shattering it must be for some folks within our world today to discover that their faith, in which they thought that they had faith in for so long, and that they had established, was nothing but falsehood. And you do realize and understand that there are people who are finding this out. I'll never forget, now I think this was back in the 90s, whenever this happened, but a lot of you are familiar with the TV evangelist Benny Hinn. And Benny, he's famous for these crusades and things that he does on God's healing power. And, you know, every crusade, he would invite those that were lame and having disease and having complications, and he would invite them to come forward. But you know, what a lot of people were fooled about was the fact that his own workers would go into the audience and they would pull out certain people. So it wasn't always people in wheelchairs and people who obviously had obvious infirmities. But they would bring them up, and of course he'd lay hands on them, shove them, say all kinds of things, and you know, miraculously they're getting up and they're walking away, and you know, they're praising God along the way. And for years he got away with that, until the media got involved, and they started sending secret reporters into some of these things. They started filming some of these activities. They started getting eyewitness accounts of people that were there. And then, of course, as happens, there was a couple of disgruntled people who had been part of the big show who were no longer with Benny Hinn, and then they started confessing about some of the things that went on. People's lives, all of a sudden, were starting to realize that this man is just a charlatan. It's been nothing but a show. He hasn't healed anybody. He's been misleading us. He's been lying to us. And all of a sudden, their faith was shattered. I think that it must have been a similar feeling for the centurion. But in one moment, in a half a day, he finds something that gives him hope. You see, that's what Christ does to shattered lives. That's what the event of the cross is all about. That it can take a shell of a person whose life has been shattered because of sin, whose faith has been shattered because of the lies and the falsehood of religions around them and the relationships around them. And Jesus Christ can take that life, give that life hope, strengthen faith, and mend those shattered feelings and those shattered strands of faith and make them whole again. And that's what happened to the centurion. And brothers and sisters, that's what happened to us. That's where we're at today. Jesus Christ gave us our faith and continues to strengthen that faith. What the centurion witnessed on the day of Christ's crucifixion was not normal. And it caused him to fear and believe. It was not normal on natural terms for sure, but consider this as well. It also wasn't normal on terms of mankind. Because Jesus wasn't a normal person, was he? He didn't handle things like normal humans do. He didn't react the way normal humans do. When we acknowledge who God is and that He has the power to judge our eternity, belief should cause fear and obedience. But whenever we also witness the mercy and the grace and the patience of God, belief should cause love. Ecclesiastes chapter 12, verse 13 through 14 reaffirms the first part of this. Let us hear the conclusion of the whole matter. Fear God and keep His commandments. For this is man's all. For God will bring every work into judgment, including every secret thing, whether good or evil. We understand that part of God. We understand the just part of God. We understand the need to obey and be obedient to Him, submit our lives to Him. And we understand that that's the beginning of what we need to acknowledge in the nature of God. But then, when we add in the element of not only Jesus Christ, but also of God, we see the other side of things. 1 John chapter 4, verse 7 through 11 tells us about this. Beloved, let us love one another, for love is of God, and everyone who loves is born of God and knows God. He who does not love does not know God, for God is love. In this, the love of God was manifested toward us, that God has sent His only begotten Son into the world, that we might live through Him. In this is love, not that we loved God, but that He loved us and sent His Son to be the propitiation for our sins. Beloved, if God so loved us, we also ought to love one another. You see, that's the aspect of the cross. The fact that God sent His Son out of love, not out of any obedience on our part, not because we deserve such an action, not because we deserve such love, but because He simply loved us. And I think that the centurion must have caught a part of that. Because it was not only the earthquake and the darkness and all of these great things that were happening, but he witnessed how Christ reacted to all the mocking, probably even some of the mocking he had done. He witnessed how Christ reacted to the cruelty of mankind, and certainly man can be cruel. And we go through times in which we interact with people, and people sometimes say mean things to us and do mean things that break our hearts and hurt us badly. Don't you know that the same thing happened to Jesus Christ on that cross? But did He ever rebuke back? Did He ever mock back? Did He ever try to defend Himself? No. Instead, all He showed was love, mercy, and grace. Centurion witnessed that. And I think that that also was something that made a huge impact upon his heart that day. We have not witnessed what the centurion witnessed except in words inscribed upon paper. However, we will be held just as responsible to our own decisions we make about Christ and the cross. In John chapter 20, verse 26 through 29, an event that transpired after His resurrection as He met with His apostles, finally Thomas is there as well. And it says, and after 8 days, His disciples were again inside and Thomas was with them. Jesus came, the doors being shut, and stood in the midst and said, peace to you. Then He said to Thomas, reach your finger here and look at my hands, and reach your hand here and put it into my side. Do not be unbelieving, but believing. And Thomas answered and said to Him, my Lord and my God. But Jesus said to him, and here's the part we need to hear this morning. Thomas, because you have seen me, you have believed. Blessed are those who have not seen, yet who will believe. You realize who that's talking about, right? It's talking about you and me. Jesus is acknowledging there are going to be those who are going to read about the events of my life. They're going to read about my teachings. They're going to read about the events of the cross. They're going to read about the centurion who stood there. All of these things that we have discussed, all these things that we study. And the only thing that they're going to have as proof is the faith in their hearts. That's you and me. We didn't physically see these things. We didn't physically witness these things. But great are we because we have heard them and we believe. Have we feared the power of God and His authority to judge our souls? Have our hearts been touched by His love and tender mercy? Have we noticed how different Christ is than the rest of the world around us? If we have, then we have experienced what the centurion experienced at the cross. The question we have to ask ourselves this day and every day in which we live is this: what are we going to do about it? Now that we believe, now that we understand who Jesus is, now that we know He's not like everybody else on this earth, now that we know that because of His love and His mercy and His grace, He went to that cross so that you and I could live and look forward to something that we could put hope in this world. Is there a lot of hope in this world? Is there any hope by living a worldly standard? Maybe a few years of pleasure? And let's face it, there are a lot of folks out there who are living without hope that aren't even finding years of pleasure. They're not even finding years of wealth and prosperity. Just problem after problem, downfall after downfall. They need hope. They need the same hope that you and I have within our hearts, that we have witnessed by the words of knowing that Jesus Christ went to that cross to save us and give us a home for the rest of eternity with Him. You know, we're here this morning because of that. But don't you believe that there are others within this community that need to hear that same message, that need to feel that same hope, that need to know there really is a God that's alive, that's real, and that cares about me? I think that there are. And hopefully we'll have the opportunity to reach out to them, to plant the seed of the gospel, to give that seed of hope into their hearts. I believe the centurion found hope on that day. I believe and I know the centurion found the true God. And I like to think, even though we don't have any proof of it in the rest of the Bible, I like to think that he not only had a heart change, but he had a life change that led to his faithfulness in Jesus Christ for the rest of his life. So what are we going to do with it this morning? Are we just going to have a heart change, or are we going to have a change of life because of what Christ did for us? Only time will tell. But today may be the day that you need to make the decision to go forward with those efforts, to go forward with your conviction of what you have been convicted in this morning. If you're here this morning and you haven't obeyed the gospel, you need to obey the gospel. Jesus Christ went to that cross for you. Now's the time and the moment to take advantage of that great and wonderful gift. And if you're here this morning, you can do that by believing that Jesus Christ is the Son of God and confessing that before others, repenting of your sins, being baptized into Jesus Christ, and then living each day for Him. This is what all the Christians did. You can read the book of Acts. This is what they're doing in obedience to the gospel and receiving salvation through Jesus Christ. And you have that opportunity to do the very same this morning. We stand ready to assist you if you're ready to make that decision. If you'll just come while together we stand and sing.